All right, so the topic is dynamo action with wave motion. Although the wave motion is only a special case, or is intended to be a special case, of more general time dependence. And the motivation to look at that is that it reminds us, at least, or perhaps it rediscovers, an alternative way of looking at how magnetic fields are generated. If you want an intuition of where magnetic fields come from, one normally looks either at the alpha effect, which is suitable for helical or similar flows, or to Lagrangian chaos. But something else, which is perhaps a more abstract but nonetheless useful representation, is that the induction equation of the kinematic dynamo problem has an operator in it, which for all interesting cases is non-normal, and as such has eigenstates which are not orthogonal to each other. And that implies a property which has been interesting, for example, in the recent years to explain how shear flows transit from laminar to turbulent, which is that, of course, some initial conditions can exhibit a transient growth even though every single eigenmode is decaying in time. So to just give a fast representation of that, if you think of a 2D problem, and the eigenstates are represented then by vectors in the plane, then there are two eigenvectors, which here are supposed to be 1 and 2, the thin arrows, and you start with an initial condition represented by the thick arrow, which is the superposition of 1 and 2. If the eigenvalues are non-degenerate, one of the eigenstates is going to decay more rapidly than the other, perhaps much more rapidly. Suppose it is this eigenvector which decays quickly, whereas this one decays much more slowly, then the superposition of both is going to yield a vector which rotates in the direction of the slowly decaying eigenfunction and increases in size. Now, ultimately, of course, the vector has to shrink to zero again because all states decay. If for some reason, something has happened to the operator in the meantime, so that the eigenfunctions are oriented differently than they were at t equals zero. And they're oriented perhaps now as such, so that the black state has rotated this way and increased a little bit in size, so that the superposition of the new eigenvectors is, for example, this here plus this one, and again, this one is decaying more rapidly than this one, then the initially transient growth can continue for some time. And in fact, the transient growth can become a sustained or permanent growth in some cases. That is, for example, the case in the problem of transition to turbulence in shear flows, in which the modification or the change of one set of eigenvectors to the others occurs through the nonlinear terms. And in the context of the kinematic dynamo, you can think that you have a time-dependent velocity field, which is such that its representation in eigenmodes leads to eigenmodes varying in time, for example, in a way that they're simply rotating in a suitably chosen space. In that case, you could think that the transient growth that you see in this configuration goes on at a later time. If the eigenvectors are simply rotated, then this arrow will continue to grow, and if the eigenfunctions continue to rotate, the growth will continue indefinitely. If that rotation is too slow, nothing happens, or at least instead of seeing growth, you will see decay again. If the rotation rate is slow compared to the decay rate of all eigenfunctions. If, on the other hand, the rotation rate is too fast, then again, you will simply see some average and get nothing but decay. But you can expect that for some frequency in between, you in fact find a growing mode or a growing state, even though every single eigenmode is a decaying function of time. Now, is that applicable to a dynamo? Now, we've heard a few days ago that the Galloway-Proctor dynamo is the best. that is a little bit a matter of taste, perhaps. I grew up more or less with this dynamo, and I still like it very much, which is due to Gio Roberts. So to remind you, being in the experimental session, that's the dynamo or the velocity field which was at the basis of the Karlsruhe experiment. So it consists of, in the ideal case, of a 2D infinite array of right-handed helices, which are represented here by streamlines in the XY plane, and the signs represent the out-of-plane component of the velocity field. In formulas, that's the velocity field, so it's independent of Z. There's one parameter in here which tells you how fast the flow out of the plane is compared to the flow in the plane. And what is introduced here now is a drift of the entire velocity pattern in the X direction. So you could imagine a wave in the style of a Rossby wave, perhaps, in which this here would be the rotation axis, and the entire wave pattern is drifting or propagating in one direction, in the X direction, with this drift velocity Vd. Now, if you think of the magnetic eigenfunctions that this flow has, if you take one snapshot so that the velocity pattern is at one position, you get one set of eigenfunctions. If you wait at a later time, what has happened is that the velocity pattern has shifted by some distance, so the eigenfunctions have done the same. They've simply shifted by the same amount in x direction. That means that the scalar product between two eigenfunctions is independent of time. And in function space, if you wish, the effects of the drift of the velocity pattern is nothing but a rotation of the eigenfunctions. There, the angle between them, or the scalar product between the eigenfunctions, being a constant of motion, which is repeated in this this slide here. So you could think that if now you choose that flow and the magnetic Reynolds number such that every eigenmode is decaying in time, but now you allow it to drift, that by the mechanism presented in this 2D picture before, you can actually again get a growing field, provided that you find enough non-orthogonal eigenfunctions. In that respect, that example of flow is not the best chosen, because it has many symmetries, and of course eigenfunctions belonging to different symmetries are orthogonal to each other. So you will only get the sort of interaction which is interesting, and which resembled what the non-normal eigenmodes can do by changing in time, and only for eigenfunctions within one symmetry class. So nonetheless, if you try that, these are again the few equations, so you, which I intended to show, in fact, that if this drift velocity is really just a drift velocity independent of time, that problem is in fact equivalent to one which is independent of time. If you simply change frame of reference and go to the co-moving frame of reference, you see a flow independent of time. Nonetheless, what we will see that the interpretation of the result is in fact easier if we stay in the frame in which we see the drift, simply because we can then use this picture of the time-varying eigenfunctions. So the equations being solved are quickly written up here. So the non-dimensionalization is made such that the magnetic Reynolds number appears in here, and we are looking for solutions which are the magnetic field depending on the in-plane coordinates. Mu is the growth rate, and given the periodicity of the box in which the magnetic field is being sought, and the most rapidly growing modes have a certain wave number in Z direction, which happens to be 1. And what one finds is what you would expect. This picture shows growth rate as a function of drift velocity. at a magnetic Reynolds number such that at zero drift velocity, all fields decay. But if you let the velocity field drift, then you see that from negative velocity rates, you go to positive ones, and if the drift velocity is too fast, again, you lose the dynamo. So that's exactly the behavior one expected from this picture of the time-dependent eigenfunctions. You could also give a more MHD-minded interpretation to that. Yes? That's so the value or the parameter in this graph is this growth rate, and then is of course the with the kinematic dynamo something independent of time.
The growth rate is the unit of
time. Yes. So did you? In order to get the RM the way it stands there, well, it's a binary question. So it's either true. Yes, it must be the circulation type of a single eddy. Right. So what one could do also is give a more, as I said, an MHD-minded picture, which is that if there's no drift, well, at the chosen RM, it is not the dynamo. If the drift is too fast, the drift cannot help either, because whatever distortion is made to the magnetic field lines during half a cycle is undone during the next half cycle before there can be any significant diffusion of the field lines. And only in between do you expect to find something helpful or see some helpful effect by from the time dependence. The effect is nothing peculiar. You see it for a wide range of parameters, which is shown quickly in this graph. You see here the function of this parameter, which measures axial velocity compared to in-plane velocity. That is a non-zero drift velocity, which does help the dynamo. I think it's perhaps a little bit long to explain if there are only 5 minutes left. The right panel is perhaps more easier to read, that the effect is not small. And what is shown here is what is the smallest critical magnetic Reynolds number you find for a given velocity pattern that you allow to drift compared to the non-drifting critical magnetic Reynolds number. And you see that you easily can reduce the critical magnetic Reynolds number by 70% or so. And if you mind to compute at high resolutions and at more extreme parameters, by much more than that. Now, instead of taking this idealized 2D velocity field, let's take one which appears in geodynamo simulations. And to be more accurate, this is a convective-driven dynamo, which was part of a benchmark, which has the advantage of being easy to analyze, and it's easy simply because its time dependence is a simple drift. But at any rate, convection sets in as something of a wave, the wave being a pattern which rotates around the rotation axis of the planet or of the object that is being simulated. And what you can do then numerically is to run the full simulations until it reaches its stationary state, then switch off the Navier-Stokes integration, extract the velocity field, and adjust at will the drift rate it has around the axis. And then you see, by plotting here, the decay or growth rate of the magnetic field normalized by the dipole decay rate as a function of that drift, that if you took that pattern and had it non-drifting, so the Rossby wave stationary in the frame of the mantle, that flow actually would not be a dynamo. And it requires a drift. And you see the same picture as before. As you let the pattern drift, you find eventually a positive growth rate. And if the drift again becomes too fast, you lose the dynamo again. This way, in fact, you even find two kinematic dynamos, one of which is the one which also satisfies the dynamic balance of having a velocity field which satisfies the Navier-Stokes equation. Now, this would say more or less that drift or time dependence is helpful. I mean by that that now I chose always constant drift rates because they are simple to look at, but you would expect the same qualitative mechanism to be active if the drift rate was somehow time varying. But there is some evidence, and you have seen this figure before, and there are similar calculations, which rather support the opposite. If you at least introduce turbulence, it is rather more difficult to get a dynamo excitation. Now, there could be two reasons for that. One is, and it remains to be explored which one is the right, that the time modulation of the large scales is either very fast or very slow compared to what it ought to be in order to be helpful for the dynamo, or something else, which I might quickly show you, is that the presence of small scales is what is creating the problem. Again, using this dynamo, meaning the 2D periodic infinite extended Geo-Roberts flow, shown again here, which has a certain periodicity length. And instead of choosing only this periodicity length, you could add several velocity fields, which are all identical except for the size of the periodicity length. And in that way, you can artificially generate a multi-scale kinematic dynamo and then investigate whether the presence of the small scales is helping or harming the dynamo. And, well, doing that, now I'm simply going to summarize that. The fact is that there is an interplay between the different scales such that the small scales can be a problem for the large scales, but not so much the opposite way. The mechanism being that the magnetic field generated by these flows looks different at the scales larger than the scale of the velocity field and the length scales smaller than that. One indication which is well known is, for example, that the ellicity has different size at large and small scales. And by investigating now what happens if you add to a large scale velocity field some small scales, the point is that if the small scales make a significant contribution to the total magnetic field, then the large-scale velocity field sees a magnetic field it does not like because it cannot do work on it in order to generate also a large-scale magnetic field. And the net result is, which is perhaps summarizing here, that the large-scale velocity field then sees a magnetic field which is not the one it would produce by itself, and therefore the presence of the small-scale velocity field disturbs the creation of the magnetic field. Okay, coming to the conclusion, so I'm not going to repeat all of that, but first I'm going to point out the last two points here, that this effect of the drift is something that presumably is not simple to incorporate in a picture of the alpha effect, at least at the level of first-order smoothing or second-order correlation approximation or whatever you want to call it, because the term which is responsible for this drift effect is of the same order as other terms you have thrown away. So that in order to be consistent, you presumably are not going to find that drift effect in these approximations. And the last point is, of course, that it's something like a drift velocity, and its adjustment will be part of the saturation process. So if you have a kinematic dynamo with a drifting velocity pattern which creates a growing magnetic field, then you can simply saturate it by changing the drift velocity without doing anything to the velocity profile itself. That's one means of of reaching saturation. Okay, and I'm simply going to stop by references which contain.
When you take the non-drifting pattern, right?
Yes.
That's an integrable system, so it's not chaotic. I mean, I know you should figure it out, but when you drift it, does it become chaotic?
I didn't compute Lyapunov exponents or didn't attempt to try that.
I mean, I know I should be able, if a uniform translation still leaves it integrable or not. I mean, I should know that, but I don't. Because the effect of all of these things, that you take a pattern that is integrable, right? I mean, because the streamline is a Hamiltonian, and so if it's a 2D Hamiltonian, it's integrable, it's not chaotic. Then you make it time dependent, and the effect of the time dependent is that, you know, essentially becomes chaotic.
Right.
And so
that could be. And of course, the question is how big. What I wanted to do, but ended up not doing, is to compute the size of the islands or the regions which have positive Lyapunov exponents. That is likely to shrink or grow depending on what the drift velocity is. No, I haven't done that. No.
Oh, Dave has an answer to your question.
Yeah. To me, at least, this flow, the two-dimensional flow, looks very much like the Ohtani flow. Do you know about that one?
Except that this one is time independent, at least in the case where it's not
drifting. You're one with the drift velocity. When you mess around with a Ohtani, you can turn it into something where the phase has a drift velocity, just similar to yours. Mm-hmm. And it's known that with a Ohtani, Ohtani is certainly chaotic and gives you a fast dynamo. Mm-hmm. And that was the sort of rival dynamo that was going around at the time of when Mike and I were dreaming ours up. And I think probably what you've got there is actually a special case of Ohtani. You can try and look at that afterwards.
The point is, of course, the RM here, the magnetic Reynolds number, is quite small. So in the sense of being fast or slow, it definitely is going to be in the range where diffusivity is still relevant. The magnetic Reynolds numbers are in the tens or so.
What you show on the non-normal mode analysis is gives you algebraic time dependence, and I don't understand how you can kind of look for an exponential time dependence on this thing in the end. All the individual transient growths that you are talking about have algebraic time dependence,
no,
like T2.
No.
Yes.
Why? What do you call algebraic? I mean,
It's T to some power.
No.
Well, yes.
Every single eigenmode, of course, decays exponentially.
No, it decays exponentially, but the intermediate vectors that you have grows transiently like t.
No, t to some power. The sum of them is the sum of exponentials.
Well, but how do you get some exponential growth overall out of that?
Well, that's a rather simple exercise. Again, if you think of the case where you have simply the 2D example, No. The short or long time doesn't enter in this case.
Well, what coffee that could be settled. So, Steve.
I have a comment, I think. There's a great paper by Fausto Cattaneo and somebody else, I can't remember who that was, where they looked at the interaction between dynamos on different scales with the great Galloway-Proctor flow. So you have a Galloway-Proctor on large scale and lots of small scale Galloway-Proctors. And when you look at the interaction, it's a very subtle effect as to when they interact to improve the dynamo when there's no difference, and you can get resonances and things like this. I was wondering if you get similar things with the Roberts.
Yes, well, there is a rather simple interaction. So it can actually be only of two kinds. Either you have the small scales, which through this difference in field morphology are disturbing what the large scales are doing, or if you have boundary conditions of one sort or the other, then there's going to be one optimum size for the eddies. Yeah. And then if you mix in something that you call small scale, but nonetheless is close to the optimal, then of course the presence of the small scales can be helpful because they are closer to the optimum kinematic dynamo.
Yeah, it's similar. Yeah.
But that's about all there is.
So I was just wondering, when you did the kinematic solution with the geodynamo, extracting the velocity field from the geodynamo, what was the drift velocity in the actual dynamo? Was it near the peak of that growth?
No,
rate?
It was the fast velocity.
Okay, so last short question, please.
Andres, in fact, the alpha omega dynamo operator is also non-normal, and such effects can occur also in mean field dynamos. And there was a, perhaps, and moreover, there is a, from the Euler complications, you don't need a true dynamo here. Even this temporary growth can be captured by nonlinear effects. And you can have a self-maintained magnetic field in a nonlinear system. And there was a paper, interesting paper on that respect, an application to galactic dynamos of Fedotov from Manchester. Mm-hmm. A couple of years ago in geophysical fluid dynamics. I think it's a very promising mechanism, which is very poorly explored, can be very important applications.
So I think with that comment, we're going to take a break and reconvene at 10 after, and let's thank